Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 25th of January. Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Ojuro.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Kenyans fear insecurity as more young people join radical and extremist groups.
It's a real threat to the security, not just for foreigners or tourists, but just for locals. Our report actually says that a huge portion of citizens, about 80%, still live in fear of Al-Shabaab attacking them.
Migration and youth unemployment is our biggest challenge, Gambia's President Adama Barrow tells DW in an exclusive interview.
This is a problem that needs to be looked into in a wider context. And we encourage them also to invest back home because people lose confidence. They don't have jobs.
Please don't miss that. Plus the latest from the World Economic Forum in Davos.
All that and more coming up shortly. But first, let's catch up with what's been happening around the globe.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. The Democratic Republic of Congo told Belgium to close its development agency in the country and to close a European Union visa processing center as well. The move comes after protests in Belgium against crackdowns on rallies that oppose Congolese President Joseph Kabila. The European Union has also been critical of Kabila, warning him against crackdowns before upcoming elections. The United States President Donald Trump has arrived at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. Trump is set to speak to world political and economic leaders about his America First agenda. He has already met with UK Prime Minister Theresa May. Before going into the meeting, May said they had a lot to talk about.
What I want to be talking to the President about, and will be talking to him about, is a whole range of foreign policy areas where we have faced shared challenges and are working together. So whether it's working together in relation to North Korea to stop them from their illegal activity in relation to ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons, whether it's working together in Syria where, of course, and Iraq, where great strides have been made in relation to dealing with Daesh, or whether it's working together to reduce the destabilizing activities of Iran in the region.
A ninth round of UN-backed peace talks between the Syrian government and opposition forces has begun in Vienna. The talks in the Austrian capital come a week before Russia plans to conduct its own talks on the ongoing conflict. The UN Special Envoy for Syria said this was a critical moment for the talks and that he was optimistic for a positive outcome. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The European Court of Justice has determined that sexual orientation tests cannot be used to determine the final decision on asylum seekers. The ruling will affect all 28 members of the EU. The court decision comes after Hungarian immigration officials made a Nigerian man go through psychological tests to determine if he was homosexual. The unnamed man requested asylum in the country, claiming that he faced persecution in his home country due to his sexuality. A car traveling from Burkina Faso ran over a mine in central Mali, killing at least 13 people. Several others were wounded in the blast. Local officials said that there were merchants in the car who were traveling to a weekly market when the explosion occurred. The officials blamed terrorists for the mine, but no groups have, yet, claimed responsibility for the act. The border between Burkina Faso and Mali is known as a volatile area. Representatives from Namibia started hearings in a court case on Thursday in New York, demanding reparations from Germany. The case was actually filed last January, but Germany rebuffed efforts to appear at pretrial hearings, appealing against the process itself. Germany occupied the southwestern African nation in the 19th century, and German rule led to the killing of tens of thousands of Herero and Namaqua people in the early 20th century. North Korea urged residents on both sides of the DMZ to come together for unification. The announcement comes as members of North Korea's women's ice hockey team arrived in the South to train with their southern teammates in the upcoming Olympics in South Korea. Tensions on the Korean Peninsula have been high in recent times after the North tested nuclear weapons in the face of international sanctions, but representatives from the two nations have met frequently this month. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. That's DW Africa. So please like, share and send us your comments on the stories we are covering. Now, there are fears of heightened insecurity levels in Kenya due to both internal and external factors. A new report indicates that more than 50 police officers were killed by Al-Shabaab in November last year in different areas close to the porous Kenya-Somali border. But even within its borders, the rise of extremism and young people joining criminal gangs is becoming a problem.
Now, Toweza East Africa, a research organization based in Nairobi, says at least 78% of the population fears that Al-Shabaab is the biggest security threat to the country. But as our correspondent Andrew Wasike tells us, many blame unemployment for the rise of gangs.
The sound of metal detectors and full-body scanners at Nairobi's Westgate shopping mall, where an Al-Shabaab attack killed 67 people in 2013. It's not just at the mall. Security was beefed up in buildings, churches and social places, where you can also spot several plain and ununiformed police officers. Despite all these efforts, are Kenyans feeling safe? I spoke to some shoppers at the mall.
I'm happy, because if you see all these people, it makes you delighted. People are forgotten, people are happy again, our economy is going to shoot.
The reopening of this has given us a new impetus. It has given us a new fighting spirit to show that despite the fact that when terrorists attack, one of their main aim is to ensure that where they destroy, people pull down those buildings and put up memorial parks. But in Westgate, we refuse to do that.
Toweza East Africa, an independent non-governmental organization, says 8 out of 10 Kenyans still believe Al-Shabaab is a threat to the country. In a report released today, at least 33% of Kenyans are unhappy with the police, who have often been accused of corruption and doing little to ensure security. I spoke to Victor Rateng, the senior program officer at Toweza.
Before terror attacks in the country became a major thing, people walked into malls without having to be searched. People drove without having their cars to be searched. If you go to Westgate, actually, today, the level of search there is actually top-notch. So our report actually says that a huge portion of citizens, about 80%, still live in fear of Al-Shabaab attacking them. But at the same time, we see that when we ask them about what could be leading citizens to join radical groups, a huge portion is talking about unemployment.
According to Rateng, this unemployment has led to the latest rise of criminal gangs who are terrorizing locals and foreigners.
It's a real threat to the security, not just for foreigners or tourists, but just for locals. So what is surprising is that, unlike in the past when we've seen that the police have been deployed in huge numbers to probably bar protesters who are agitating for their rights, political rights, I would expect that in this kind of situation, we have all these police forces deployed in the city to just clear this mess once and for all.
He fears the planned swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga as president next week is raising more security fears.
As to whether that is a security threat, there should be worry if the government of the day unleashes terror on the people. If that is going to be a violation of the constitution, then the right thing is to arrest him. And a responsible government will do the right thing if they want to avoid killings of people, because it's the duty to protect innocent lives.
A report by Andrew Wasike in Nairobi.
And there are reports, or rather, we had a question on our Facebook, because dozens of Kenyan students are actually leaving universities to join terrorist groups in Somalia, Libya and Syria over the last 3 years. That's according to a local newspaper in Kenya. And we asked, what pushes university students to join militant groups? And Eunice.
Yeah, this is actually a very good question. Let's see what our listeners had to say. Albert Fwamba wrote and said, no jobs after graduating from the universities, and they are promised huge amounts of money by terrorist groups.
And it goes on to say, youths will go to any extent just to get something good, which they think can make life better.
And Jumba Derek Da Prince says, the harsh economy where you can't afford 2 meals a day, even worth $1.
Well, so we will keep tab of what you are talking about on Facebook. But now we move over to Gambia, where Gambia's President Adama Barrow says the unemployment of young people remains a major challenge 1 year after he took power, ousting former dictator Yahya Jammeh. Speaking in an exclusive interview to DW's correspondent Omar Wali, Barrow says that unemployment and migration is causing the dangerous journey to Europe for young people. But he has refuted claims that he signed a deal with Germany to accept deported Gambian migrants from Germany.
I think there are rumors that we have signed with the Germans to return Gambians, migrants from Germany. That is not the truth. We have a honest discussion with the German president when he came here. Our message was very clear that this is a problem, it's not a Gambian problem. This is a problem that needs to be looked into in a wider context. Germany and other countries all be part of that. We should look a way out, a format that can suit everybody in this. So it's everybody's business. And we encourage them also to invest back home, because people lose confidence. They don't have jobs. Let them invest back home here. We create the jobs here so that the people will stay back home. Well, you know, people, they are our biggest partners and they are our biggest donors. We are on the same wavelength with the European Union, and I think they have high regards for Gambia, especially during this short period our performance.
That was Gambia's President Adama Barrow in an exclusive interview with DW's Omar Wale.
Now let's head to Davos. The world's political and business elite leaders are there in Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. African leaders, including Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa, have been speaking in various forums. According to the program, Thursday sees Davos focusing more on Africa. So I caught up with DW's Andreas Becker, who is there, and I asked him how much interest in African affairs did he perceive at the conference.
Well, Africa has a strong showing this year in Davos with 10 heads of states and government, and among them is also Emmerson Mnangagwa, the new president of Zimbabwe. And his main reason for coming to Davos is clear. He wants to tell the international investors here that they should not worry, that their investments are safe, and that the country is once again open for business. And all the other African politicians, they do the same, and not actually only the African politicians, but that's what politicians do here. They present themselves in front of other business people and investors that their countries are good for business. And Nigeria's Vice President Yemi Osinbajo, for example, he took up the theme of Africa rising here and said that Africa had high hopes of succeeding China as the manufacturing hub of the world.
As wage costs go up in China, Africa is becoming the obvious choice for, you know, sunset industries and those kinds of things. So it's clear that that will happen. There are quite a few initiatives in that direction already. There are quite a few countries that are, I know that Ivory Coast is, Nigeria is, with development of special economic zones and all that, with partnerships coming from China.
But he added that there was no quick fix for Africa's development, that things would take time, and of course many other issues like the lack of real important free trade agreements or corruption. These are all topics that the African representatives here try to avoid or play down.
Okay, now the Nigerian vice president has mentioned China there, and China's influence in Africa has been growing. What is Europe doing to counter this influence?
When it comes to the Europeans, for example, German Chancellor Angela Merkel was stressing the importance of African development. Merkel says the cooperation with Africa is very important for me personally, and Europeans have a great debt from colonial times to fulfill to Africa. We are very much interested in Africa's development.
Zweitens haben wir ein tiefes Interesse, dass sich Afrika vernünftig entwickelt.
The French President Macron also echoed the same sentiments. And of course, the European interest in Africa's economic development has increased since the beginning of the refugee crisis.
I was speaking to DW's Andreas Becker, who is at the World Economic Forum in Davos. Now, Zippy.
Well, and now allow me to take you back to our top story, which was actually about their fears of heightened insecurity levels in Kenya due to both internal and external factors, young people joining radical groups and unemployment as Emmanuel Macron was just talking about, and what is happening in Africa. And of course, we had lots of reactions on that. Eunice Demede Luis Ababasu said that this is due to government failure to rule the nation, not Kenya alone, but many African nations, where young people are joining terrorist groups.
Yes, we must also say we asked a question, what pushes university students to join militant groups? And Eric Asewe says the hope of getting a decent job has several diminished since there is no enough jobs to satisfy the demands. It seems like people are really out looking for jobs. Well, let's hope that the situation can change for them. In case you've just tuned in, this is Africa Link. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes...
The dependency rate in Ghana is blocking some young people from their dream job because they have to work several jobs in order to make ends meet.
I must work extra hard to make sure that I have enough for my immediate family, they are comfortable, and then also extend the same courtesy to other family members.
And we will hear from some Namibians on what they think of the legal battle between their country and Germany over the colonial era genocide. But now, first to the Kenyan film Watuwote, which was just nominated for the Best Live Action Short Film at the 19th Oscar Awards ceremony this year. The film, which in English means All of Us, chronicles the tragic Al-Shabaab militant bus attack that took place in Mandera, Kenya on the 21st of December 2015.
Now, this is a film depicting brotherhood and solidarity as Muslims refused to be separated from Christians in that attack, which left two dead and several injured. Produced by three students from a Hamburg media school along with a Kenyan cast of producers and actors, it will compete with five other live-action short films in the prestigious awards slated for March 4th.
And Eunice, I talked to the production manager, Christine Savane. To start off, I wanted to know if they expected to beat other 1,500 entries and be nominated for the Oscars.
Mostly I would say yes as a surprise because when we were making this film that we knew was going to be a powerful film because of the topic that was chosen to talk about. Everyone worked really hard. The whole team, cast and crew, everyone worked really hard. And for us to be among the five listed films for the Oscars, that's just a big deal for us.
You are addressing one of the issues which in Kenya at the moment is a problem, security and the issue of religion. What was actually the main focus when you did this short film, Watuwote?
It's not a Kenyan problem. It can happen to anyone in the world. We have people being radicalized. We have people being... People are fighting. People are killing each other because of things that they do not even understand. So for us making this film, there is a message of solidarity that is passed on. Yeah, and also considering the fact that, you know what, you just never know where you'll be living. If I'm living, for example, I'm in Nairobi, I don't know, I'm not going to choose who my neighbors will be. If they're Muslims, if they're Christians, if they're Catholics, if they're whatever.
Mm-hmm. In your view, what do you see is the future of Kenyan film?
Yeah, I just think for us, it's just that, you know, we have a film industry in Kenya. People should know that. We can make films. We can tell stories. Be it, you know, like, for example, this film, it wasn't like a big budget film. It was a student film. So it's possible to actually make a film and the film can do really, really well. You know, for us to get this Oscar nomination, it's just like, oh my God, you know. We worked on this film. We had very, very, like, being the production manager, you know, I was dealing with budget every day, trying to make things work. It was a student project for the Hamburg Media University, their graduation film, and they decided to come and make the film in Kenya, and they met us, and, you know, it was like a co-production, right? You know, just trying to put resources together and seeing what can you offer, what can you do, and... Having Lightbox as a service production company that worked on and having producers from there also working on the film. Nature of the story, the way it was told, the locations we had, they were really, really harsh locations, like harsh places to put up and stay there for like 5 days and make the film.
What do you think are your chances of actually winning this award, looking at the other films maybe?
Fingers crossed we might win this award. I'm not sure. I mean, the rest of the films are really... good film. I think it just lies with the people who are going to make the decisions. For us, just getting to where we are, we're like, oh my God.
Zippy, that's an interesting talk you had there with this production manager, Christine Savane. And you also talked to one of the actors, Anthony Ndungu, right?
Yes, Eunice Ndungu was one of the officers in the film, and as he told me, being nominated for the Oscar Award is a platform to showcase Kenya acting talent to the world. Take a listen.
It's a big interesting to us, whether one played a minor or a major role, because you're part of it. Your movie is in the Oscars. So we hope it's going to raise our profile, and big things are going to come our way. I mean, big jobs, big projects.
Did you expect this nomination?
Well, at first we didn't, because even when we were doing the project, it was just a student movie. Some students from Hamburg who wanted to do a movie, so it wasn't. We just thought it's going to be a short movie, and then that's it. We were surprised.
You're one of the officers in this Best Film Action. Tell me, what were some of the challenges fitting into this role?
See, the story, it's a very touching story. You get to understand that here we are harassing people, and then in Mandera, where we're supposed to be providing security, people are being attacked. Not because we don't have enough security personnel, but because there's laxity. Because if you watch the movie, the reason why that bus was attacked is because the escort car, I mean, had issues. The police just told them, you just go, you'll be fine. That's how it happened.
That's Anthony Ndongo, one of the actors in the Watuwote film, which was just nominated for the Oscars.
I'm really looking forward to watch that movie.
Yeah, make a date. It's already premiering now.
Use on.
In Ghana, in 2016, the dependency ratio was measured at 66.7%, higher than many other African countries. This ratio is used to measure the economic burden that those who are not working, dependents, place on those who are working, rather the producers.
Now, the trickle-down effect of having more dependents than producers in a society is that there is huge pressure placed on the few members of an extended family who manage to get a job. This is blocking young people in Ghana from trying for a dream job because they have to work several jobs to make ends meet. Maxwell Souk attended a recent youth forum on the subject in northern Ghana and sent us this report.
Okay. It is a bustling day here at the Abuabu market in Tamale. Fatawu Yakubu and his colleagues are busy carrying loads.
Every day I have to do this to support my family.
Fatawu is 27. He has no wife or children yet. But he takes care of five of his relatives as well as his own parents who don't have jobs. And it's not only market workers who are having to carry heavy family burdens. Clement Borden is a communications officer for an NGO in Tamale. Besides that job, he has several extra jobs because
I must work extra hard to make sure that I have enough for my immediate family, they are comfortable, and then also extend the same courtesy to other family members. I mean, it looks like it's a burden on me, but as a man, a family man, an African, I have to shoulder all these responsibilities.
And that takes a chunk of his earnings monthly. A hall filled with enthusiastic youth has gathered to listen to speakers about investing in the future. They sing the Ghanaian national anthem to remind themselves about their individual role in making the country great. The overwhelming majority of Ghanaians are under 40, and so the authorities are trying hard to ease the dependency ratio burden on this group.
If we invest very well in them, the dependency ratio, the numbers that they will have to take care of, will not be like the numbers we took care of. And so there will be extra money for investment.
Mama Teni is an officer with the United Nations Population Fund, the UNFPA, in Tamale. He wants to get the young people thinking about breaking the trend of creating large families which then have to be supported. The cycle of poverty revolves around larger family size in Ghana. Wherever you go in society, this cycle repeats itself. Being able to save is important because it allows people to pursue further education and work towards a dream job. But there is little time or spare capacity to save in Ghana. But there are some benefits to the large African family network, as Mohamed Jabaru explains.
It's not only my father and my mother who have helped me in my life. Others have come through in one way or other, assisting me throughout my education and throughout my upbringing, and they are external family members. So we see it as a responsibility to also assist other family members.
But many don't see the benefits. Some young people have even resorted to moving to the city and changing their phone numbers regularly so that the wider family can get hold of them to ask them for money.
Maxwell Souk reporting from Northern Ghana.
Speaking out.
The first genocide of the 20th century was carried out in present-day Namibia. At the turn of that century, some 80,000 people were massacred by German colonial forces. The victims were members of the Nama and Herero communities. Today, their descendants want reparations from Germany and have filed a lawsuit in the United States. Ahead of the trial in New York on Thursday, Anna Salkis spoke to some Namibians and sent us this report.
Namibia and Germany have held a number of dialogues on the past that still haunts both countries. However, not every community is satisfied with this approach. The Vaherero and Nama people in particular have taken the 1904 to 1908 genocide reparations into their own hands, demanding payment. But is this the best approach for both governments? This is what one member of the Vaherero community, Kambarura Kaputu, had to say.
It's a very important move. It's a very good move. It shows that we are in the right direction in getting what we need from the Germans. It shows also that at least even though there are disagreements within our community, especially as a descendant of the Vaherero community, it makes us feel that there is hope. We are going to get somewhere at least.
Some Namibians, like international relations student Linia Dishena, however, do not agree with the lawsuit and prefer that the two governments deal with the matter instead of these communities.
The German government approached the Namibian government that, okay, let's pay you guys back in a form of doing capital projects to improve the life standard of people in Namibia and not actually instead giving money to individuals like what the groups, which are the Herero and Nama people, want at the moment. I think that the approach of the German side or the German government was actually the best.
While supporting the lawsuit, Joseph Kawandenge questioned whether Germany would appear at the U.S. court on Thursday. And if not, he says implications will follow.
The demands that should be made are very simple. Reparation, reparation, reparations. And this reparation should obviously be monetary. The question then at the end of the day will be how much will this monetary contribution or monetary payment should be? Of course, whenever this money is given, one misconception that people have is that it will only be benefiting the Vaherero and Nama people, which is not the case. It will benefit all Namibians, irrespective of whether they belong to those tribes that were massacred by the Germans in 1904.
That report was compiled by Anna Salkis in Windhoek.
You can actually read more on our page, on the DW page, DW Africa. And of course, we have a lot coming from you on our comments on Facebook on that story, which is on our page. And someone by the name of John Connor is asking, what court is going to try the U.S. government for the genocide against Africans during slavery?
And Deso, also on our Facebook page says, why don't they go through the ICC since they claim that the ICC is fair to everyone?
John Sekwibulwa says if there's a continent the whole world has to repay reparations is Africa.
Thank you so much for your comments. Let's go on to another topic. That is in Cameroon. Gunmen attacked a border crossing in Cameroon's southwest on Thursday, launching their assault from Nigeria. Security source witness told Reuters. And no one was killed, the officials said, but the incident is likely to further damage relations between their neighbors, strained over the rise of an Anglophone Cameroonian separatist movement. We had one comment on this, Zippy.
Mommy Jack says it is a simple problem that started with a request for a two-state federation, which was rejected on the grounds that the form of the state is a non-negotiable. And now he says, see where we are today. The country is even more divided than any form of state would ever make it. So that is what is happening
in Cameroon. It's really not a good thing to hear what the Cameroonians have to say about their country. Well, we have something else. The U.S. has called for an international arms embargo to be imposed on South Sudan following failure of the latest ceasefire aimed at ending the four-year conflict. Comments coming in. Tony Karg says U.S. is not the police of the world. All this rubbish needs to stop. They can't be calling for sanctions for countries, and UN foolishly succumbs.
And someone is questioning and asking, how can they have peace? The US has just suggested a way. What do you suggest? He's actually asking. What do we think about it?
Looks like today everyone is commenting and asking questions. Well, we hope that your questions can be answered in one way or the other. Thank you so much for keeping it Africa Link. Join us again same time tomorrow. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And my name is Pora Nyambura.
Bye for now.